This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans, or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place, whether you're in the mood to talk jazz with a renowned drummer, start an art collection that is both fun and affordable, or visit a local nonprofit that is helping to cultivate our local film community. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Herlin Reilly is one of the world's finest drummers, the sort of fully engaged performer whose blend of passion, expertise, and palpable joy is, well, irresistible. He recently sat down with WWNO's Fred Kasten for the Talkin' Jazz interview series at the old U.S. Mint and talked about the profound role that family played in shaping his life in music.
Herlin Reilly grew up on Delery Street in the Lower Ninth Ward, cradled in the sound of his uncles, saxophonist David Lasty, trumpeter Melvin Lasty, and drummer Walter Poppy Lasty, rehearsing their jazz band.
A combo called the Lasty Brothers Combo. And, you know, that's the first time I heard moaning, like, you know, Art Blakey's The Jazz Messengers. I heard a lot of that music, but I heard it live because my uncles were rehearsing it in the house. And, it was at my grandparents' house, 1807 Delery Street in Lower Nine. And they would be rehearsing the music in the house. And my mother tells me that sometimes I'd be crying and they would just roll my crib into the room where they were rehearsing and I would kind of be my pacifier, kind of shut me up, you know. So the music was always a part of me, you know. A lot of my friends asked me, man, how did you learn how to play jazz? I said, well, I don't know, it was just there. And, you know, the feeling and the groove of the music was always there for me. And, you know, my uncle's just, you know, it was just like somebody asked you, when did you learn to talk? You don't know. You just, you know, someone spoke to you and you heard it and then you gave it back.
Was the drum the first thing that you played as a kid?
Yes, the drums. Well, the first thing I played was my grandmother's pots and pans. And then, you know, eventually, yeah, I got to the drums. And, you know, and most of my drumming playing, you know, in my early years was in the church, you know, because my grandfather was, you know, he was a deacon in the church. And He was like one of the first people to bring the drums into the church in New Orleans. So when he'd play, you know, I'd be sitting there like, you know, just like a child, man. I'd just be waiting, twiddling my thumbs, waiting. You know, I'm in the spirit of the music as well, but I want to get to the drums. And when he got up from the drums to speak or something, then that was my opportunity, and I'd sit down and let me play. And, you know, he would always, you know, sometimes he'd fuss at me because, you know, as a young kid growing up, I'm hearing all kind of music on the radio. I'm hearing Fats Domino, and I'm hearing James Brown. I'm hearing all these, you know, all these different kind of grooves. And so the playing in the church was really my only chance to get to play the drums. So sometimes I'd be playing the drums and, you know, playing the church groove and that kind of thing. And then I'd switch over and play like a James Brown Cold Sweat. My grandfather would say, boy, don't do that. That's not the place for this. Don't do that in here. You just play time. You know? So I'd go back. And so it was a great experience also. And it taught me that, you know, how to, there are certain styles of music that's functional with that works with certain styles, you know. And I've been very fortunate to play a lot of different styles of music. I'm related also to Jesse Hill, the guy who made Oopoopadoo, and anyway, who's Trombone Shorty's grandfather. So we're related, and then he was, my uncle Jesse was very tight with Professor Longhair. Professor Longhair was kind of cool with my family, so they would come, you know, come to the house. Professor Longhair had come to the house. And he played the piano every now and then. And, you know, Dr. Johnny, he would also come to the house and play, you know. And but Professor Longhair, he had put a mark in my grandmother's piano because when he played, he would kick the side of the piano with, you know, with right. The side of his foot. And, he, you know, playing after a while, you know, he just kind of put a gouge in it. And so before Katrina, that piano was still there. It was, you know, and, you know, you could still see the marks where you would play it. And so it was a lot of guys who Oliver Morgan was in Lower Ninth Ward. He made Who Shot the Lala. There was Fats Domino, of course. It was, you know, and Freddie Domino, and, you know, and a lot of guys were, you know, there was a lot of music in Lower Ninth. And you know, I was very fortunate that my grandparents' house was a house that always had some music and had a piano, so there was always some stuff going on. So I got to hear a lot of different music as a boy growing up.
Herlon Riley got piano lessons at 10, took up trumpet at 12, and in high school got solid grounding in music fundamentals and theory from great public school music educator Yvonne Bush. Being a professional musician was his sole ambition.
I never dreamed of having another job, because my Uncle Melvin was really my mentor. You know, he and Harold Baptiste started the record company, AFO, and all that stuff together. But anyway, he was my mentor, and I saw him working as a musician and really, you know, enjoying his life. He passed away at 42, but I still was enough. I saw enough of him and also my uncles who, you know, my Uncle David and my Uncle Walter were musicians too, but they had other day jobs, you know. But my Uncle Melvin he was only a musician. That's all he did. And so I wanted to be like him, you know. And so music was always a part of me, and I always wanted to be a professional musician, always. And so I'm really living a childhood dream.
In addition to the example of his uncle, Melvin Lasty, Herlon Riley got good guidance in the how-tos of being a professional musician from guitarist, banjoist, and Fairview Baptist Church brass band founder Danny Barker.
Danny Barker talked to us, myself, you know, I was a part of the Fairview Baptist Church Christian band as boys with Leroy Jones, Dr. Michael White, and Tuba Fats, and Lucian Barberin. And I mean, I'm just naming a few, but Danny Barker was such a strong mentor, and he told us about how to communicate with the people, how to look professional when you're on a job, how to, you know, respect the bandstand, act like you're enjoying what you're doing. Because when you know, and my Uncle Poppy told me this, he said, you know, when you're, as a musician, you're a public servant. And so you have to, you know, if you people have made provisions to get to you and, you know, bought a ticket or got a babysitter or got a new outfit or whatever they did to come and see you play, you owe it to them to give your best. And so those are things I took from, you know, my mentors. When I'm on the bandstand, when I'm in front of you, you know, I respect my audience, and I respect them. I respect you enough that I will give you everything I have.
From 1982 to 87, Herlon Riley worked with legendary pianist Ahmad Jamal, then began a 17-year tenure with Wynton Marsalis in Wynton's quintet, sextet, septet, and the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra. He's toured extensively with McCoy Tyner and is now on another go-round with Ahmad Jamal. You can catch him leading his own band frequently at Snug Harbor and other venues around the Crescent City. For 89.9 WWNO, I'm Fred Kasten.
This interview with Herlon Riley was made possible in part thanks to support from the New Orleans Jazz National Historical Park, which presents the live interview series Talkin' Jazz with Fred Kasten, the last Friday of each month at 2 p.m. in the third floor auditorium at the old U.S. Mint. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. A New Orleans-based creative subscription program called The Drop is determined to make collecting art easy, accessible, and fun. A round of subscriptions is underway, and to find out about it, Sharon Litwin spoke with one of the women in charge of the project.
In times of financial hardship, when local visual artists brace for yet another huge hit as potential consumers hesitate to spend money on art, along comes a couple of young arts entrepreneurs who say, hold on. Amanda Brinkman, with her bachelor's degree in art history from the University of California, San Diego, and master's from Chicago's Art Institute, and Cameron Shaw, with her degree from Yale and recent arts writer grant from the Warhol Foundation, are both avid lovers and newcomer residents of this city. Together, they have concocted a truly creative idea. It's called The Drop.
Every 2 months, we commission three artists to create works of art specifically for our program. And then we make those works available to people in the community. But we're really thinking about how can we get people in New Orleans involved with what our artists here are doing.
Now wait, before you zone out, listen to what Cameron Shaw is saying, because the bottom line here literally is how to purchase one curated, limited edition work of art for as little as $80, two for $150, and three for no more than $200.
Over the course of the year, we're going to be working with 18 artists. It's a really diverse group. We wanted to think about artists at different stages in their career, artists who have different relationships to New Orleans. Some of these artists are born and raised here. Some are here post-Katrina. We have artists that we're thinking about who have gotten here in the last year. But all of these people form the arts landscape here. A lot of times when people think about getting art in the mail or getting art in a box, they think, okay, well, I'm going to get a print or a poster. We wanted to expand that. We're working with sculptors. We're working with video artists. We want everyone to take their practice, what they do, and find a way that they can make that approachable for a broad audience.
Now, here's where it gets interesting. It's a little like going to the track, knowing your pick will come in, but unsure whether you should bet to win, place, or show.
If you buy one work of art, you don't get to choose which artist you get. And we thought that that was a fun element of surprise. We were thinking about how can we make collecting art affordable? How can we make it feel accessible? And also, how can we make it fun? And everyone loves a surprise. If you buy two works, you don't get to choose either. We get to choose the two works for you. If you have someone that you're dying to have, you have to buy box three, so you get all three works. And we hope that also through this, people will learn to appreciate the works they get. Maybe it's not the artist you thought you wanted, but you learn to live with the work. You learn to build a relationship with it. You may love it. You may hate it. You may learn to love it. You may give it away to someone else. All of those things are fine.
And if, like me, you're always wondering whether artists get a fair shake out of all of this, here's what they get.
We give the artists a stipend. So they get $2,000 for doing the project with us, and we give them $500 additional for material costs. And when looking at programs that were happening in other cities, artists were not getting that much. There were programs where artists were getting $1,000, and that included their materials, and we thought, okay, we want to beef this up, put more money in artists' pockets, and also connect them to future collectors.
For more information about The Drop, go to WWNO.org or NOLAVIE.com. For WWNO, I'm Sharon Litwin.
Sharon Litwin's Notes from New Orleans is brought to you in partnership with NOLA V and is made possible with the assistance of the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. As film production work pours into Louisiana, a nonprofit media arts group is helping locals access jobs and cultivating a more robust local film community. Writer Ian McNulty, who produces WWNO's Community Impact Series, has more.
Louisiana appears on the big screen a lot these days. But whether it's a star-studded Hollywood venture or a small indie effort, it all starts with people in Louisiana getting together and getting to work. From camera operators to grips and gaffers to accountants and attorneys.
One of the things that's unique about filmmaking is it is never a solitary venture. You cannot make a movie on your own. Even the smallest film is a community of people required to make it. So that's what we try to do, is help develop that community.
That's Darcy McKinnon, executive director of NOVAC, or the New Orleans Video Access Center. This nonprofit serves as a bridge for the film industry coming into Louisiana and locals who want to take part. It's an industry that's booming, of course, thanks to state tax incentives that have made Louisiana a top destination for film, TV, and other video projects. NOVAC's work gets into the technical and business decisions that make the industry tick. But NOVAC also keeps a focus on the artistic and cultural potential of filmmaking for Louisiana.
We're dedicated to cultivating the art of filmmaking and local artists in that realm, but we're also connecting them with job opportunities in the film industry because we view them as connected. What is necessary for a really thriving film community is the community, and that's what NOVAC tries to do, is to connect people together, connect people to resources, connect people to opportunities.
So today, NOVAC offers different training programs and events that may be geared towards local indie film directors looking to up their game, or toward a local electrician looking to work on the set. It has a low-cost equipment rental program and can assist local productions with fundraising. There's NOVAC's Ready Set Film workforce training program to grow local talent, and a job referral program for producers looking to crew up. Here's NOVAC's director of programs, Ashley Charbonnet.
These productions want to hire locals. They don't want to bring in a gaffer or a grip or a dolly grip or a makeup artist from Los Angeles or New York. They want to hire local because their tax incentive is greater. So we try to train these people who are interested in gaining access, who may have some experience, who may have no experience, who may have experience in an applicable skill.
Lately, NOVAC has partnered with the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation to produce Sync Up Cinema, a film conference held between Jazz Fest weekends while people from across the entertainment world are in town. And this summer, NOVAC is running a youth media camp where high school students will make music videos for local bands.
So we are really hoping that through the influx of resources around the film industry that have been coming to the state of Louisiana in the past few years, we can really harness that to cultivate a sustainable, long-term, local, independent filmmaking community. My dream is that 10 years from now, there is a Louisiana or a New Orleans style of filmmaking and a community of filmmakers that people know about because of this time that's happening right now.
Learn more about NOVAC at WWNO.org. For WWNO, I'm Ian McNulty.
The Community Impact Series is made possible with support from the Greater New Orleans Foundation. And we have something extra in our Lanyap Corner. The ballots are in, and the heat is on for NOVAC's coveted 48-hour film project awards. NOVAC will be doling out prizes for best overall film, best director, best cinematographer, and best actor. It takes place at One Eyed Jack's, 615 Toulouse Street, Thursday at 7 p.m. And be sure to stay for One Eyed Jack's famous 80s night after the awards. Save the Date has more than 60 arts organizations are gearing up for the 5th annual Culture Collision, a one-night-only free happy hour event that kicks off New Orleans' 2013-14 cultural season. This year's Culture Collision will be held at Generations Hall, 310 Andrew Higgins Drive, on August 28th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. There is a ticketed after-party featuring the funk rock band Morning 40 Federation from 8 to 10 p.m. More info at WWNO.org. Irvin Mayfield's Jazz Playhouse at the Royal Sonesta Hotel will host a fourth installment of Love Sessions, a festival of giving. The community initiative pairs outstanding jazz music with a fundraising component. Love Sessions runs from Friday, August 23rd through Thursday, August 29th, culminating with the anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Each night benefits a different nonprofit organization in the community. The seven nights of music will feature Grammy Award-winning trumpeter Irvin Mayfield and the Jazz Playhouse Review with special guests. Each night's performance will be recorded live to create a commemorative CD set under the Basin Street Records label. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.